Greetings, friends. It is I, D. Trussell, formerly known as the Blender King, and you're listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. I just returned from a trip to Italy where I had my entire face tattooed, so forgive me if my voice sounds a little different. My mouth isn't working. Let's jump into this podcast. That was Prince Terry Green Falcone from his album of 4th of July songs. And that is Held the Hand. And of course, that's Daniel Johnston. It's a cover of Daniel Johnston from his album 1990. I love Daniel Johnston. Not only is he one of my favorite singer-songwriters, he's one of my favorite souls that has ever emerged from this beautiful, bubbling planet. Bubbling planet. Lots of heat here. We've got calderas, we've got super hot pools of water that people will fall into from time to time and dissolve completely, unless they were wearing like spandex or something like that, in which case they'll find the spandex floating on the surface of the water. There's actually a job at Yellowstone that where people just have to go around all the hot springs and scoop out the spandex because people, they see the signs, they see the warnings, they don't read them, they don't pay attention, and they just go frolicking off into Yellowstone and dive headfirst into boiling hot springs. We will never know the number of people who have dissolved in those springs, but when it happens to someone, you have to ask yourself, were they done? Were they tired of it all? Did they just want to return to the earth? But most importantly, you got to ask, what's up with these spandex-clad Yellowstone people? I don't want to get political. I don't want to get into the news because I am hoping you're avoiding most of it. But I'm going to just for a second. If, in case you haven't read, there's this new thing where like these weird dudes, it's only guys in their 30s, 40s, 50s. Mostly in the 50s. Where I come from, we call them silver foxes. They're beautiful. They've got generally like gray hair. They wear biker sunglasses, not like motorcycle bikers, but bicyclists, cyclist glasses. You know what I'm talking about? Really cool multicolored Oakleys. And yeah, nobody knows who they are. They refuse to identify themselves generally. Of course, now the park rangers are looking for them because obviously, nobody wants anyone to die. Even if that person wants to jump into the hot spring, nobody wants anybody to die. And I'm not trying to in any way denigrate these men, though I do disagree with what they're doing. But they decided to do this for whatever reason. And it's the people who have to clean up the spandex that are in real danger because it's, number one, it's uncomfortable to get next to a boiling hot pool of water. especially when you're using one of those long-handled pool nets to scoop out the spandex and the Oakleys. It's just dangerous. And I'm sure the people who signed up to work at one of the most beautiful national parks on Earth didn't think that their job would be early in the morning trying to avoid tourists to get out there and scoop out all that spandex. Sometimes there's some scrotal tissue, which is another interesting thing. You know, I don't know what's going on the planet. I don't know why all these bizarre things are emerging simultaneously. And until I am flying in a UFO over the pyramids, listening to the Smiths, I am not going to believe or let myself completely believe that just maybe the federal government is about to disclose the existence of aliens. That being said, I think it's pretty lame to instantaneously not believe somebody who, with seemingly complete honesty, is reporting things that they have seen. And so I'm grateful to anybody keeping our national parks clean. That's above me right now. That's above me on a special, on a plank that I ordered from Etsy, laser engraved. I'm grateful for that, what they do. And so I'm going to believe them. I'm going to believe them, especially when lots of them are saying, whenever you don't find the scrotal tissue, you don't find the taint tissue most of the time. Most of the time it's dissolved into the pools. It should be every time. Every time. It's just human flesh. It doesn't matter what part of the body it came from. And yet, according to multiple whistleblowers at Yellowstone, they have found somehow, sometimes a full scrotum just floating there, testicles intact. And inevitably, when they find this, these flashing lights appear in the sky above them. Spinning orbs, triangles. One of them said that there was actually an oval-shaped thing with a glowing, effusive, linguistic tendrils. So communicating to them as they scoop the scrotum up. They don't make enough money for that. You know, And when you have things like this happening, how do you quantify payment for, like, combo alien encounter scrotum scoop? What is the value of that? Like, what do you, like, if I said to you, hey, do you mind going down the street to this very dangerous, boiling, sulfuric, hot spring and scooping the scrotum of a silver fox out of it? While being scanned, what is it? Is it minimum wage? Is it $30 an hour? Because probably scooping up a scrotum doesn't take that long, would be my guess. Even if you're being very careful, using safety harnesses, attaching yourself to a nearby stump, bringing a buddy to watch and make sure that you don't fall in. So then what is the payment? Are we doing like per scrotum? Which then that means that you would have to bring me the intact scrotum. I'm not a rube. I love my national park workers, but I know some people get through the very intense interview process to work at a national park. I know in my younger days, if I knew, let's say I was getting like $300 per silver fox scrotum, I might just, especially like if I was in a rough financial situation, I don't know how bad I would feel if I, you know, marked down a few extra scrotums. I know that's awful. I wouldn't do it now. As Neem Karoli Baba said, love everyone and tell the truth. I'm not going to lie about scrotum scoops. I don't want that to follow me around for the rest of my life. But I could see a kid doing that, especially a kid with like a fentanyl problem or something. So the point is, these are unquantifiable systems of payment because there's no precedent for it. And that seems to be the way things are these days. There's just no precedent anymore. You know, when I was coming up, the discussion of paying for scooping like human flesh out of hot springs, that paying for the alien encounter and the lifetime of weird dreams you're going to have after that didn't come up. We didn't, because it wasn't happening. But it is now. We got orca attacks. We got aliens. We got these suicidal silver spandex foxes flocking to Yellowstone and just diving into the hot springs. What are they doing? What do they know that we don't know? Is it a cult? And if it is a cult, how come it's not being stopped? How is it that the FBI, the CIA, intelligence has not like gone deep into this? And if I was at Yellowstone with my children and one of them caught sight of just a taint floating in that boiling hot water, that could be therapy. That could be therapy. I can hear them saying, "Daddy, there's a taint. There's a taint in the water." You know, I'm so happy to be alive, and I love how things are now. And you know, to quote from the third patriarch of Zen, the great way is not difficult for they who hold no preference. And this is a me problem more than likely, because I do have a preference when it comes to my hot spring viewing. I want a pristine hot spring. I want to look at it, think about the hollow earth, think of how it looks like a dragon's eye, think about how cool it would be if I could jump into it and not be boiled to death. Wonder about like what else could be down there. But now every time I look at a hot spring, you know what I'm going to be looking for. I know what you're going to be looking for. And this is what happens. This is how just a few people way too far out of default reality can really like can mess up a national park. And I'm sorry, I shouldn't have even shared this with you. I'm sure you're aware of it. I think they're doing like a whole hour on it on Dateline soon because, no, again, they can't figure it out. And I'm praying it's going to be Keith Morrison who is the host of this one, because I, no offense to my other Dateline friends, Keith is my favorite. But also, you know, the meta thing is Keith Morrison is a silver fox. So a silver fox investigating will be interesting. And I am definitely not implying to you wonderful people that this is a conspiracy of all silver foxes, that all beautiful, symmetrical, fit, gray-haired men have something to do with this, and that maybe they're all eventually going home. Maybe that's what it is. Cross my mind, sure it crossed yours. The lemmings, they go off the cliff. The silver foxes, they go into these bubbling hot springs. And is it a message? Is that what the scrotal tissue is? Have they, as many people are theorizing, including Alfred French from Harvard, have they been doing some kind of like scrotal dipping or scrotum surgeries or some kind of is it a diet that they put themselves on? They say that like at one point, I hope they're still not doing it, this thing emerged in Buddhism. Look it up, where some of the monks would start drinking this strange brew mixed with like pine, and essentially they would mummify themselves before they died. And this is one of the theories right now about it, because an analysis of five of these scrotums returned some very strange data, not just that the cells within the scrotum seem to have crystallized. And again, this could be related to the chemicals in the hot spring. Occam's razor tells us that the most simple scrotum answer is generally the correct scrotum answer. But we have to like contextually analyze the situation. Like, yeah, sure. If there is no simultaneous UFO encounter with the people cleaning this stuff up, I mean, it's almost a nothing burger, but it's the UFO part. Like, when the UFO shows up, are they, as they scoop it out, are the lights doing something to the scrotum? Is the scrotum calling the UFO? Is the UFO warning us to leave the scrotums in the hot springs? That is a very scary theory that popped up on Reddit Conspiracy. That somehow the silver foxes know that we're on the precipice of a super volcano erupting over there, and that the only thing that's going to stop it is these like specially mummified scrotums. Like somehow it balances out, something calms the volcano. The volcano could be asking in its own way for this. I mean, throwing people into volcanoes is a time-worn tradition, happened throughout history. You know, the efficacy of the practice, I have to imagine it didn't do much. And if it did, it's just confirmation bias. Because if I'm throwing my friend in a volcano to make it rain, and it starts raining, and somebody's like, that's just a coincidence, I'm going to kick their fucking ass. That was my friend I tossed in there. Oh, really? It was a waste of time. Oh, really? So it just so happens we were going through a drought. I took Carter up to the volcano, tossed him in. Liz saw the look on his face of surprise because he thought we were just going on a hike. Heard him scream. And now you're going to tell me I'm not responsible for the rain. But we live in modern times. We must not succumb to the superstitious part of our mind that wants to make connections where there are none. And yet, the human mind is curious. It's a quality of humanity. One of its our most beautiful traits is that curiosity. It's that call that has brought some of the greatest things into our world. Not just the call, but listening to the call. Vaishnava Bhakti Yoga, that's a fancy name for the Hare Krishnas. Vaishnava Bhakti Yoga and many other lineages in that tradition is the practice of cultivating the love of God, in this case, Krishna. There are many beautiful stories, metaphors for life that show up in some of these sometimes relatively obscure scriptures. One of them, which I love so much, is the story of the Rasa Leela. Krishna is out in the forest on a full moon playing his flute. And the gopis, that's the name for the cowherd, girls, women, it's nighttime, tending to their fire, maybe about to fall asleep, babies are sleeping, husband's playing Diablo 4, and they hear that flute, that beautiful flute. It's the sound of God, the music of God. And they say they leave the lamps burning. You run into the forest to follow that flute. They leave their lives behind. Because, not because of some discipline, not because of some extra effort, but because the sound itself, so magnetic, so powerful, so transcendent, that all you can do is run to it. Before you can run to the flute, you have to hear it first. And there's bhakti yoga, or any great spiritual tradition. You know, the argument in The Brothers Karamazov, and weirdly, I flipped through this damn book just to find this little parable that shows up in all 16 trillion pages of the damn book. It's super long. Come on, Dostoevsky. You could have edited Oh, greatest Russian writer of all time, in my opinion. You could have edited it out or something. But, you know, a lot of the chapters in there are essentially essays, discourses on Christianity. And I've read Dostoevsky was what's known as an existential Christian, like Kierkegaard, but I don't fucking know. I wouldn't know an existential Christian if it bit me in the ass. But he talks about this problem when it comes to God, from the Christian perspective, which is, if God can cause conversion just by touching you, or some magical bolt or a little sparkly beam shooting out of the fingers of Christ floating through the air and like landing on your pineal gland or whatever, then we have no freedom. You're just like a glass of water that God dropped some food coloring into. Nothing special there. So, in his analysis, it's more about choice, the decision. And, you know, you can fill in whatever the Jesus with whatever you want. It's the decision you make. Start listening. And then when you hear it, to go towards it. But the good news is, if you can hear it, you'll probably go towards it. It's the way my dog acts when I shake a bag of food. I mean, that is maybe the most non-romantic, mundane, potentially blasphemous way to describe the call. Curiosity is the beginning of it. You're not going to hear Krishna's flute if you don't get curious. You're not going to dig deep into why these scrotums are showing up in our national park hot springs until you get curious. Now, this is totally non-scientific, non-journalistic. I have not investigated this. I will not name the neighbor who talked to me about this. But one of my neighbors, you know, I passed him jogging. We jogged shirtless together through Austin, like 3 in the afternoon, 105, 104 degrees, no big deal. I love the heat. And I slowed down a little bit so he could catch up. And he said that he'd been in his hot tub, which is a really wonderful thing to do right after you finish a nice afternoon Texas run. I like to jump in my hot tub and relax. Yeah, he said that there was a scrotum in his hot tub. And you know where I'm going with this, that he went to scoop it out. A UFO appeared above it. We must not be afraid to look into these occurrences. We must not be afraid of the disappointment, of the embarrassment that might come when, as it turns out, all of this can be completely explained with logic and being rational. You know, at that moment I'm looking at him, I realize, you know, he's got gray hair. He's fit. And so I said to him, hey, I know this seems crazy. I will show you my scrotum, which is completely normal, non-treated, if you will show me your scrotum. And this is Texas. People are cool here. They're not freaked out like in so many other places. So right there, he pulls the spandex down, lifted his penis. I'm sorry. Sorry. You're listening to this in the car with the kids. Yeah, and showed it to me. It looked like he'd been dipping it in like pine tar or something. Like it had a crystalline quality to it. And he gave me a wink and he ran off and he ran fast. Curiosity, friends, allow yourselves to go where your curiosity calls you. Sometimes it's going to call you into a clearing where you will dance with the divine. Sometimes it will bring you to the place where you are analyzing your neighbor's scrotum. But I'm going to wrap this up here because we have a great podcast today. If you accept that maybe you're not just a you, you're a tendril of consciousness, a sentient protuberance, is that a word? I don't care. A sentient protrusion? Tentacle. The fingers of the earth exploring. Little antenna trying to understand itself. Some of us, we explore the divine in Varanasi in clearings under the full moon. And some of us, we go full science. We're not afraid. Some of us looking at the scrotum of the neighbor is not enough. Holding it is not enough. We want, you learn so much from smell. So if stuff shows up on the internet over the next few days where it appears that I am on the streets of Austin with my face buried in my neighbor's taint and scrotum, you know why now. That's the whole point of this rant. So, yeah, what you're seeing there in those pictures that someone tried to blackmail me about and said, if you don't, you know, send over blah, blah, blah amount of Bitcoin, I'm going to release these. I mean, come on, man. I'm supposed to remember that password to get into my MetaMask wallet. I don't know where I put my phrases. Look, if you see, I'm just saying, I love you guys. I hope you love me. If you see these pictures come out all over the internet in the next couple of days, just know you're looking at like basically Neil deGrasse Tyson. It's no different than Neil deGrasse Tyson or a picture of any great scientist looking into a microscope. I was just looking into a microscope that happened to be located under my neighbor's like incredibly gigantic, this is Texas, phallus. I wanted to know the truth. I want to chip in. I don't want to just sit in my room playing Diablo 4 vaping. I want to chip in to the scientific community. And yeah, I'm willing to go the distance here. That's all. We'll do it another. You know what? I will have a smelling scientist, I think is what they call him, come on the show and talk about smells and how much you can learn just from the biochemical signatures released from any given person. How much that will tell you, like with the biocomputer of the human mind. We've got a wonderful podcast for you today. Tom Segura is like the best ever. Not only is he insanely funny, not only does he have multiple podcasts that are the most listened to podcasts on the planet, but he's just cool. Nice friend. Somebody just like, for me, whenever I'm around him, I just get happier. He's so fun to spend any amount of time with. And, you know, he's a very, very busy person. So I was incredibly excited when he said he'd come on the show. Because, you know, when you get to that point, like when you're like sort of like, I'm sorry, I doubt you listen to podcasts, you go on, but if you are, I'm so sorry if this is embarrassing. But when you get that level of momentum going, you don't have a lot of time. And if you do have time, you probably don't want to spend it doing podcasts if you're a podcaster. So super cool that he came on the show. And it was so fun talking to him because he's really funny. And he really opened up a lot about what it's like to be like an ambitious, successful comedian and like maintain like the balance in your own family and your own life, which is something that I've experienced myself and most people I know who are comics who go on the road. It's just like something that like you have to figure out a way to balance it out. You have to make decisions that maybe to your former ambitious comedian self don't make sense, you know? Where, because like most comedians I meet feel like beyond lucky to have this as our job. Flabbergasted might be a better word for it. And so you really like want to keep like investing your time into like getting out there and doing it. But you know, once you decide to have a family, then that really has to be at the top, if you ask me. I mean, the family just under leveling up your Diablo 4 sorcerer. Because Jesus Christ, if I could just get into those tier three dungeons and get some unique gear, then I could probably like spend less mana on my Frost Novas. We're going to jump right into this episode, but first, this. Sometimes I speculate that one of the reasons people don't take vitamins regularly, by people I mean me, is because there's something so weirdly frustrating about how easy it is to feel better. When I drink AG1, aka Athletic Greens, that's what happens. I just feel better right away. And the reason behind that is because Athletic Greens is the ultimate supplement. I don't have time to alphabetize my vitamins. I've got kids and I'm clumsy. So I'm going to spill vitamins. I got dogs. I don't want to roll the dice on what happens when my poodle swallows rhodiola. Probably will be fine. Maybe not. Maybe it will give it some power. It will be able to burrow through walls. Maybe it'll just go full Cujo on me. I don't know. The point is, Athletic Greens solves all of those problems. AG1 is incredible because within every delicious scoop of AG1, you've got everything you need. Want to deal with your aging? They've got zinc, biotin. Want vitamin C? They've got vitamin C in every scoop. I already mentioned rhodiola. They got magnesium, B vitamins. It's going to give you the energy, good, healthy energy. And if you, for me, most importantly, prebiotics, probiotics, and plant-based enzymes that help support digestion, regularity. And when you're my age, that means a lot in overall gut health. They didn't tell me to say this, but I'm telling you, when this stuff is going into the old talkie hole, it's like I'm sorry to be vulgar, Athletic Greens. I'm trying to think of a way to say it. How do I say this? It's like I'm pooping like a teen. It's incredible. I'm so proud they're my sponsor. And I would love for you to try it for yourself. If you want to take ownership of your health, try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/Duncan. That's drinkag1.com/Duncan. Check them out. Try them out. You will thank me. You will thank them when you realize that your body was like some withered, barely alive swath of cursed land. And Athletic Greens is the holy mystical rain that brought that land back to life. AG1, we love you. And we're back. All right, everybody. Big announcement. There's been a change to my Patreon. You go to patreon.com/DTFH, subscribe. I've had these tiers, and it's a little embarrassing, but to like do the video tier where I hang out with everybody for a group meditation or a family gathering, I just had a come to Jesus moment when I was realizing how much I paid for Netflix, and that the video tier was like, I mean, there's a few different ones that all get you the same thing, but one of them was like, I think maybe a little more than Netflix. I mean, it's embarrassing. Just put it out there. Like, I'm not making my own funded limited series starring world famous actors. It's just me hanging out, rambling once a week. So, it's not now if you subscribe to the Patreon. It's $5. That's just what it's going to be. If you want to subscribe to the higher tiers, please do. Subscribe away. The highest ones. Jesus Christ, go for it. I don't know why you would, but do it, please. You know, I mean, my God. Do you know how much these miniature horses that my children love to eat cussed, how hard it is just to find them. And then a lot of these people selling them are so strict about, you know, come check your house out. Hey, is that a horse smoker? Why are there all these horse hooves next to your smoker? So it will help, you know, source these things, because it's real hard. Real hard. You got to go on the dark web, which I hate doing. It's patreon.com/DTFH. I am currently taking a hiatus from going on the road for the next couple months. But after that, I'm going to be doing lots and lots and lots and lots of shows. You can find those dates at duncantrussell.com. And now, everybody, I am so thrilled to jump into this conversation with the host of Your Mom's House, a comedian whose fifth special you can now watch on Netflix, at least probably the time that you're listening to this. I think it comes out like July 5th or something. It's called Sledgehammer. I was lucky enough to see it live, and he is mind-blowing. Like, this is, it's just, like, so cool that this level of comedy is happening right now. It's so cool. You will feel, when you watch it, like, you will be like, holy shit, this is, like, being back in the day and getting, like, watching, you know, Pryor or Carlin or something like that. It's on Netflix. It's called Sledgehammer. And now, everybody, welcome. First time on the DTFH, Tom Segura. Hi, Tom. Welcome to the DTFH.
Hey, Dunk.
So it's so great to see you, man. I'm looking behind you through that window.
Beautiful.
Aspen.
Yeah. Colorado, man. It's an amazing place. I've been doing the, Eat What You Kill for about 2 weeks now. So it's exhausting.
I heard that.
Some days I get fish. Some days I get elk, but you know, there's been days where it's just bugs and the kids are really upset, but I'm just like, this is life, you know?
I can't help but notice right next to the window, it looks like a pelt hanging there. What animal is that?
That's actually, it's a rare Colorado squirrel that actually, a lot of people don't know that if in these parts, there's some of them can actually fly. So It's one of the flying squirrels, yeah.
Because it looks like, I mean, again, I'm not a hunter and definitely not trying to call you out, though I know some people, like animal rights people listening, might be upset hearing what you're saying. But man, that sure looks like a dog pelt on the wall.
Yeah, no, it was, I know what you're thinking, and it's not. And I haven't, people have been saying that I've accidentally kill a dog, and I haven't. I just wanted to make that clear. I haven't.
Okay. I mean, it feels like I would hear about that kind of squirrel, and I don't do like ambush podcasts or challenge.
Yeah.
I'm so lucky you're on the show, but
and there's people that say that like a black lab looks like a cub, like a new
yeah.
like a young bear. But I've never made that distinction. I also wouldn't hunt a cub. I wanted to say that.
But it would be, I mean, like if you were super hungry living in Aspen and like you realize hunting is really hard. Like,
yeah.
I could, but you get what I'm, it'd be easy.
I could see how somebody would do that, but I would fish first, you know, make sure I would see if I could get a fish.
Fishing's hard, man. Let's say your neighbors had a dog and you were super hungry and you realize fishing is also like a skill, like a thing that takes time to, yeah. to learn, especially to catch the kind of fish to feed your whole family and your kids were hungry. I would.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, I don't know why you keep bringing up the dog thing. It's
That squirrel, I think it has a collar on it. The squirrel pelt has a collar.
They get huge here, dude. If you're in this region, you see them every day. You'll see 30, 40-pound squirrels every day here.
40-pound squirrels? Holy yeah. shit. That yes. must be scary to hear them running through the trees.
It's wild, dude. Dude, you know what I saw? I saw out on the river the other day was a bald eagle. And it's so crazy wow. to see them in person. Like, I've seen videos and obviously, like, you know, photos, but in person, he was just perched on top of a tree. Just magnificent, man.
Yeah.
Bald eagle just chilling there. Yeah.
They have resting bitch face. They're like the angriest bird. They do.
They're such dicks. They look like they're dicks, but once you get to know them,
They're so intense, and it is like of all the things to pick for like the national image, the bald eagle, man. Like what the fuck? Yeah. There's so many sweeter birds you could pick. A cockatiel. But
these things have like 9-foot wingspans. They're insane to see out in the open.
And the like their ability to just kill and the way they do it. I mean, like the horror of getting scooped up. You're just like eating grass, whatever you as an animal, and then all of a sudden just the ground is getting smaller and smaller, talons in your back, but you can't see what's you might think you're like levitating or right. It's fucked.
You just know that you're in excruciating pain and you're being flown through the sky. It's crazy. It's so horrible. And there's got to be something like there's sweet irony to the fact that it is, I'm sure, beautiful to be up in the air for the first, like you don't normally fly and you're like, wow, we're flying, but you just severed my spine with your talons.
Look how small my calves look from up here. They're, hey, yeah, watch. Did you, cause I think we both have, we like to look at really fucked up videos.
You're one of my guys. I have like a circle of guys. And you definitely send me some of the best too.
You know, I've been holding back. Like I know I shouldn't, but some of these things I see are so awful that I almost send them to you. And then I'm like, ah, but this like crosses the line because it's so
bad. You can always send it to me. You can always send it to me.
Did you see the Russian dude, the video of the Russian shark attack? The guy getting eaten by a shark.
Yeah.
What'd you think? Yeah.
Terrible. I mean, it was terrible. Like, what's worse, like, once you get you're explained everything going on in the video, it's much worse. So at first you're just like, oh my God, because you think you're seeing it, and then your brain realizes what it's seeing, and then you realize that his dad is watching.
Yes.
Off camera. And then somebody was like, his dad was videotaping. I'm like, no, his dad's not videotaping. his dad's just there. Like, and then there's like a touristy song. So it's like this, da la la, like this like playful song. Yeah. If you watch the video.
Yeah.
Because there's all these tourists out and you're that's playing and his girlfriend was in the water and managed to swim away from this.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, the it's horrible because you know he's trying to get away. You see him go up vertically and pull back down.
Yep.
And then I don't know. I read the story afterwards that said I thought he was would have been eaten. He wasn't eaten.
Mauled.
He was just mauled and killed. Yeah.
Yeah, because supposedly
it was rough.
Sharks don't like the way humans taste, supposedly. I mean, that's the great tragedy of it all, is that like you could at least, if you were trying to find the light side of someone getting eaten by a shark, you're like, well, you know, he's become part of the sea, or, you know, he's feeding a shark.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
like part, at least he's yeah. in the, he's like, it's primal and awful. But yeah, the shark, it's like, once it realizes it fucked up, it doesn't even eat you. It just swims away.
My favorite is the the marine experts, people who are like marine biologists or regular divers, always give like tips on how to deal with sharks.
Shark attack
tips. Like you're gonna have your wits about you in those moments where they're like, all right, here's what you do. First of all, don't thrash, don't splash,
don't
try
splash.
To swim away. Be very calm and like tap their nose like this. Let them know that you, and look them. They want you to look them in the eyes.
Tap their nose.
And this way, yeah, that's like.
It's, are you sure
about
this? You're
supposed to do this to great whites.
Is this?
Yeah, you've been doing it to great whites. You put your hand on top of their you know their mouth, their nose, and you go like this, and then it just kind of like passively they follow that. Because also, you know, even if they're in attack mode, their eyes roll back at the last second. They don't see what they're about to bite.
Right.
So you're just supposed to like
push them
down. Get them here. But it's just like it's like telling somebody how to deal with an armed intruder and be like, all right, calm down.
Yeah.
Just
take a deep breath.
You know, take a seat. Take a deep breath.
Yeah.
Just announce yourself.
Hi. I noticed you're invading my house.
You're my house. I'm also armed and I don't want this to end in bloodshed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you think this is a, is I, you know, you don't know how you're going to die. I don't know how I'm going to die. And certainly that guy didn't, like when he was thinking about ways he might die, it probably never occurred to him that he would not only like get eaten by a shark, but go viral, which is like a new phenomena, right? Like if you get killed in a savage way, the planet will watch. Do you think that when you get eaten by an animal, something primordial kicks in and you like relax? You kind of like go into a trance state because like, you know, we've been getting eaten by predators theoretically for so long. Sometimes I wonder if there's a built-in, because I've seen like, you see that Indian dude who climbed into the tiger cage and it kind of carries him away like a dog toy?
I've seen a number of big cat videos like that. So I don't know if I've seen the one that you're describing, but I've seen a few where it is so amazing how powerful big cats are.
Incredible.
Like it completely humbles you in such a way where you like you think you've seen real strength, and you like there's leopards that carry like they'll carry water buffaloes up a tree in their mouth, and you're like, what the fuck? It's like it's crazy. Yeah.
The whole thing's a bicep.
It's crazy. I think.
Sorry.
Yeah. The whole thing is, I think your brain does probably go into this state of where you have panic, you have resistance, and then you have acceptance, I think, in something like that, right? Like,
yeah.
It's probably like, I don't know, it's like a plane crash too, right? Like where you go like, what the fuck is happening? Oh my God, oh my God. And then it's like, if the thing is in a nosedive, you're like, oh, this is going to happen. And I think
– yes.
I think we're kind of lucky in the sense that if a big cat or a bear or something, you have that panic, you have the resistance. And then, I think your brain just goes like, you're not winning this one.
Yeah.
And you probably get released with a chemical cocktail that lets you kind of succumb to your fate, I think. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't want to find out, but.
Well, let me refer you,
I know you've
seen this one, the Mexican gang that has a dog chew off someone's balls. Have you seen that one? And at some point he relaxed, like he's watching this dog eat his balls, and the reaction you would think you would have to that would not be his reaction. It was more just kind of like, what you're saying, like surrendering to the fact that your balls are getting chewed off by a dog.
Yeah. I also think that, I mean, it's a lot of what we're describing is actually happening there. I mean, imagine what your body is capable of to deal with like these horrific things. I mean, I'm sure there's an adrenaline surge that you can't even imagine that's putting you in a state of shock actually. So he's probably actually not feeling how bad that hurts.
Yeah.
And he can't believe what's, I mean, his hands are tied behind his back.
Yeah.
And there's dudes like casually torturing him like this. Like they're not in a panic. So you're like, you know.
This is not the first time they've done that. It's not the first time that dog has eaten balls.
I know. What has to happen in those guys' lives to end up being able to do that, like, so casually? Like, how their life has gone where they're like, oh, we're the guy. Like, if you need that done, you call me.
Yeah.
And I'll take care of that.
Yeah, dude, one of them is probably thinking like, fuck, this dog always takes so long to eat balls. Like, he's like, he's got shit to do. You know what I mean? Like, they're treating it like a business meeting or something. Like, this is just on their schedule. That was on their schedule.
He's like, this sucks that we don't have Sparky, the other dog, because that dude, he tears through these, you know? This dog is so, like, passive with the way he chews. I wish he was a little more aggressive. It's horrific, man.
Horrific. This, I would love to know your thoughts on this. This is something that terrifies me, just what you're saying. It feels like there are two tight, like, it's stupid to, like, categorize humanity in, like, two things, but it does feel like there's people like us who watch the video, the people who are, like, getting their dog to chew off someone's dick and are horrified that someone would do that to someone. But then it feels like there's a whole other group of people living on this planet who look at us as just rubes, as idiots, as like complete naive dipshits, because they think that that is how you are supposed to run things. Like, that's power. And I mean, that's like the president, or, you know, the shit happening in Ukraine, or you look at that and it's like, God, like, am I, you know, are we, maybe we really are sheep, like all the conspiracy theorists yell out, you know, maybe we are so vulnerable. Because if people like that exist, man, and we aren't like that, we're fucked. Like, they're going to, like, you know, they're the ones who, when the power goes out, become the leaders. It's not the compassionate people.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're pretty lucky in that I think most people are actually, the majority of people are more naturally compassionate. And the people who rely on the most horrific things like that, you're not just a minority. You know, it takes like a series of things through someone's life to end up like that. You can't just like tap someone to do that tomorrow. You can't go to like your neighbor and be like, hey, what do you think? Could you help me cut this guy open? Like, that takes usually a lifetime of abuse and neglect, and slowly introducing like the darkest things that are imaginable to a person from a young age, and getting them to think that it's normal. I think we're probably lucky that most people never experience that stuff and aren't introduced and have a healthy reaction, which is like, this is really horrible. Those cartel guys, warlords, mob people, like, I mean, think about the grand scheme of, like, you know, there's around 8 billion people. Those people really are the few, but they are the scariest. And you're actually, you know, if like society collapsed and you ran into one of those people, you're in for probably a very dark experience.
Probably slavery. I mean, that's like, probably you're going to become they won't kill you. They're just going to like, be like, yeah, just get in the car. You're my slave now.
You must have had this thought, like, what type of slave owner you would have been. You know what I mean? Like, do you think that you wouldn't have enjoyed the benefits of living in that time?
Okay, that's a great question. You know, I think of it like in terms of like, okay, this is a roundabout way to answer the question. I saw some episode of Naked and Afraid. You ever see that? They make people take their clothes off. They survive.
Yes.
So this hippie manages to like kill, I don't know, a squirrel or something with a rock, and is holding the squirrel's body, apologizing to the squirrel and saying, and thanking it. And I, you know, I'm thinking like, God, from the squirrel's perspective, like, you know, it's still kind of alive. It's this thing, like this giant thing has thrown a rock at it and is like holding it and making grunting noises at it that are apologetic. That's, if I was, you know, I would rather someone just be like, I killed you to eat you, not like apologize and try to mitigate the karma of it. So I think with like any fucked up unethical thing, like slave, like being a slave owner, the worst slave owner would be the regretful slave owner, right? Like the one who like is like all tore up about it, because it's like, you're a fucking coward. Like you are you're somehow even worse than the one who's like, this makes sense. I hate farming. Now I don't have to farm. Yeah. I hate paying employees. Yeah. This makes sense. Because at least that person is like some kind of robot or you know, just purely evil. Whereas the other kind of evil is fucked. Cowardly evil. If you're going to be evil all the way. Don't like be like that.
Good point.
Don't fucking waver. If you're going to eat meat, eat meat. If you're going to go in your fucking neighbor's yard, take his dog. You know what I mean? And like, eat it. You know, that's what you did. That's who you are.
Yeah. I mean, if someone were to do that. Yeah. I mean, I think it's like people always, we always talk about the horrors of our history of slavery in this country, you know, which are obviously valid.
Yeah.
And what a like morally bankrupt group of people had to have lived in that time.
Yeah.
But what people like never really talk about is what hundreds of years of free labor was to the people that were doing that. And it's like, I think those people were just like, yeah, we can just order people to do all the things for free.
For free.
We just, yeah, we just feed them. And then when we get upset at our progress, like when our contractor isn't getting things done, then we just beat or kill people. I mean, that was their norm. That was the norm of the time for hundreds of years.
Thousands of years, and to this day,
well, thousands. If you look at like the world, yeah, sure.
So Rogan told me some creepy statistic about how many slaves there still are. There's still in other countries slaves.
Yeah,
like it's still fucking happening. Like it's just
what's happening too in other countries is that they're also being coerced, which is one of the sadder things that you don't think can happen in 2023, right? Where they go. Yeah. Where they're being promised work, and so they're getting people to leave their country, arrive, and then they just are thrown into these basically like camps where they're living in filth, and they are just, it's just modern day slavery. They're just converted right into slaves.
Yeah. It's, you know, when you look at that, like. You know it's bad when you're in the airport and like they've got posters saying, are you being human trafficked? And like that shows you how fucked up it is. Like if you get to the point in any of your businesses where you have to put up a poster, you know, saying like, hey, if you've been kidnapped, here's what you could do. Here's the indicator. And like that really freaks me out when I'm on road trips and, you know, U-Hauls go by. And trucks go by. Yeah. And just statistically, if you're on a long enough road trip, one of them is going to have people in it. One of them's going to have like handcuffed models in it.
Yeah. And then they're in the back of a U-Haul.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
I never see, I mean.
Go ahead.
Sorry. How come there's never like attractive, you know.
Kidnappers?
People captured in mass numbers. Yeah, no, like a hostage. Like they never go like, look how hot this group of people that are tied together in this in the back of this, you know, a cargo van are. Like they're never hot.
Well, I, you know what I'm guessing? That's like the Brinks truck level. Like if you've got like attractive people that you've kidnapped, you're gonna put them in like a more secure truck, right? That's why we don't see it. It's like they don't
Right.
You know what I mean? The ones who are getting shipped out to Saudi Arabia or whatever, or like, you know, because that happens. Like, I read this whole thing about how, like, you know, hot girls on Instagram get approached by like incredibly wealthy people from Saudi Arabia who like fly them out, get them in their fucking harem. They have harems. Give them opium.
Wild.
Get them high. And then it's not like they kidnap them, but it's like they're just like, you just suddenly.
In a daze. In a harem. Yeah.
You are in a fucking harem. And, you know.
And that's really happening right now.
Yes, there are actual harems. I've seen pictures. These dudes have harems. It's like, you know, women who are living in their palace who go into a room and they all fuck them or whatever. They're all on MDMA. They're all high as a kite and just like it. You know, this is what I'm saying. It's like we all of our friends and probably most people listening to this live in this one bandwidth of reality. That, you know, default reality, whatever you want to call it. And part of living in default reality is you accidentally imagine it encompasses like most things. But what freaks me out is like, you know, and the way we do that is like, yeah, history, there was slavery, but you know, now there isn't, or there were harems. That would have been cool to have one. But simultaneously, this shit is happening right now. Like the exact same Genghis Khan level shit, but we just never see it. That freaks me out, man. That freaks me out.
That should freak you out. I mean, you realize that's one of the big things about like exposing yourself to seeing more of the world. You realize that if you live in the United States in most parts and just decide to just never venture out, you have no concept of how the rest of the world operates in any way. Like I'm talking about when it comes to like, even the way that whatever people forage for food, or the way that that people live and bathe in a place that doesn't have running water, or the way that crime is just prevalent in certain parts of the world in a way that we don't. Sorry, I'm telling my kids to stay away. we just don't have that exposure to it. It's just like it is a totally different thing here, and it's important to actually open your mind up. But I don't know. Do you think that maybe by not ingesting and digesting what is going on, especially dark things, that you're actually just doing your mind a favor? Like, are people who go like, I don't want to know, are they cowards? Or are they just taking care of their mental health?
You know, the early Buddhism, I don't think they do. So they do it in, I think... God damn it. Thailand, maybe? No, Burma, maybe? These monks, they would go, you know, to graveyards and sit at the edge of, like, pits where bodies were decomposing and meditate for days watching the bodies decompose. And the point was...
Really?
Yes. Yes. And the idea was you need to understand that's going to happen to you. Like you don't need to just like intellectually understand it. You have to understand like with the entirety of your being that this thing you look at in the mirror every day will have a bloated stomach, will have a, you know, all the shit that goes along with death. So yeah, they would sit and do that. And the idea being to the opposite of ignore it. Don't ignore it to the point where it's not like bothering you anymore, where you've just accepted this is your fate as a human. And so sometimes
acceptance.
And sometimes when I'm looking at this stuff, that I think I trick myself into thinking I don't want to shield myself from the reality of what life is actually like on the planet in some places. And also I always have a self-help book going. Not while I'm watching it, but like I always try to balance it out. I always try to have some kind of like positive shit going simultaneously, but that's stupid. It's probably better, right? What do you think? It's better not to.
Well, I do think that like our brains do this thing both in our personal life for the things we experience day to day, and then in the greater scheme of like what's happening in the world, where your brain allows you to to shelve things, right? So it's so that you can get through the day, right? If you were just thinking about the worst things happening all the time, you would be like inconsolable.
Right.
So one of the things that like I've always been a fairly big news consumer. I feel like I'm less actually now than I've ever been, but every, like when you actually really understand that, like, of course everyone knows North Korea, but like in China, for instance, China has active labor camps for political dissidents. I mean, you can go out and just say something that is not flattering to the state and end up in a labor camp. And I think, like, when you really consider how terrifying and awful that is, you know, if you thought about that all the time, it would be to your own detriment, right?
Right.
So, like, it's to have an awareness. Maybe the thing is you have an awareness and then you get gratitude, like, because it's easy to go, like, you can go, like, how much does it suck here in the U.S.? There's all these things you can obviously go after in America. But then you go, like, yeah, we don't have fucking political labor camps.
Right.
You know? So maybe it's, like, to express the gratitude, like, makes you think of, like, I'm thankful that
yeah.
doesn't exist here. I don't know. You know, I'm trying
yeah.
to find the positive in knowing something that's so – because you can't, like – you and I and a bunch of people here are not, no matter how upset or sad we get, we're not going to end labor camps. You know, like that's just the reality.
Amazing. Like comedians,
if we held up
Austin,
our signs and we were like,
yeah,
end them.
We did it. The Chinese government was like, fuck, you know, we never really saw
fuck,
that.
Man.
Fuck, man. We were just, oh my God. Like it was right in front of us the whole
thing
time.
Is we just weren't. We weren't into podcasts until recently, so it's actually our bad.
Come listen to this.
Yeah.
These people think labor camps are bad. Like, no, I agree with you, man.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I think that if you lose track of like how incredible it is just to have electricity and a phone compared to like world populations, if you lose track, and you know,
dude.
it the same thing happens at every level of success, doesn't it? Like you,
yeah.
and this is why I think like the super, super rich, the familial rich, they're like aliens, man. Like their existence is so different than most people's existence that, because they stopped even attempting to do that. They stopped even trying
yeah.
to realize like how insanely rare their experience of life is compared to the world population.
Totally. And like, I think they're so far gone, the people you're talking about, that if you were to try to introduce the concept of like, hey, be super thankful for, like, why don't you write down the 10 things that are like amazing about your, they would be like, what? Like, I think it would be met with like ridicule, almost like you were to say, like, write down your 10 favorite words in Mandarin. They'd be like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about, you know?
Yeah, like, they hate it. They would hate that you asked.
They would just be like, yeah. Yeah, it would be met with contempt.
But the you know, in Christianity, I love Christianity. But I think when you, the idea in Christianity, somehow God, there's this devil creature, purely evil. Somehow God is not complicit in the creation of the devil thing. That's where like the logic of this stuff gets confusing to me, because it's either God made everything or God didn't make everything, which means God made Satan,
yeah.
which makes God the father of Satan, which is more satanic than Satan. So if you think about it,
I've never heard that before. That's really good.
Especially because Jesus said, you shall know the Father by the Son. It's like, oh, fuck. Like, well, I try not to think about this stuff, and maybe I'm missing the whole point of Christianity there, but you know, I think something about recognizing all aspects of reality as fundamentally perfect, even when they're disturbing, that you're still like
yeah.
watching the most incredible thing that we know of in the universe, which is like life is, even if life is hurting other life, it's still like, wow, this is part of the universe we're in, and it's somehow spectacular in this terrible way.
The imperfections are what make life life, right?
Yeah.
Like easygoing, gliding through stuff is like, Yeah, that's supposed to be a moment. Like, life is chaos.
Yeah.
Like, it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be like you had plans. Oh my God, like you thought you were going to be with this person, you're with that person, you were going to work in this line of work, that thing blows up. Like everything is supposed to be, you're dealing with what the universe provides. That's what life is supposed to be, I think.
Yeah, man. And that to once for me, it's like once you really realize that, then you have like the existential equivalent of the thing that happens when the tiger's about to eat you, right? Instead of fighting and freaking out, you can kind of relax into like, yeah, this is fucked. Like, this is fucked. Like, so much of like any person's life is probably pretty fucked. I mean, when I talk to people, usually there's always some angle of their life that's like completely collapsing or that they're climbing out of, maybe, or that they're about to fall into. It does seem to be the norm.
Right. I mean, smooth sailing. It almost feels like when somebody has a completely, like the people who are like, everything is just like this, what you're actually doing, and it took me a while to realize this, Duncan, I think what you're doing at that point is you're not participating in life.
Right.
So like you can go like, well, I don't want to pursue like the work that I really want to pursue. And therefore I'll do this thing that doesn't upset the equilibrium at all. I don't want to engage in relationships, so therefore I can't be in a good or bad one. So like if you go, I will retreat from all the things that would make life, then yeah, then they go, they're like, oh yeah, life is smooth sailing, because you're actually like not participating in life. You're not going after dreams, you're not going after relationships, you're not engaging with people. So therefore you're like, yeah, nothing's really happening. Yeah. You're also not living.
Right. Yeah. You can't, I mean, if you had to guess as a comedian, and forgive me for tooting your horn here, one of the great comedians alive right now, your stand-up is so fucking good. Okay. How many times did you bomb? If you had to guess, like if like we're in Vegas and there is like, and you get it like the marble, how many marbles are there? How many times do you think you've bombed?
Well, there's the real question is how many times have you had epic bombs?
epic bombs.
There's epic bombs. Epic bombs are, you shouldn't have dozens and dozens.
No.
Those are like a handful, you know, and I've had a few that are pretty legendary, massive,
like what?
Heart shaking bombs.
Can you talk?
Well,
about
I mean, sure. I'm trying to pick my. I mean, I've had just complete chaos unfold at shows where, I mean, the most famous one for my career was I got booed off stage, and
holy
that was
shit.
There's something poetic to it because I shot my very first special on a Saturday in Minneapolis in 2013. 7 days later, I'm on stage on Saturday doing a club. 7 days after what is the high point of my career at that time.
Yeah.
And I get booed off stage, right? With like the material that I just taped a special.
Jesus Christ.
And it was jarring. It was jarring. You know, it was like, it was pretty incredible how shaking that was, where I was like, what the fuck? I was thinking about it too. It was like, I'd never really considered, what if it were the Saturday before I taped, how that would have been even much worse, I think, you know?
You might not have done the special. You might not have done the special.
Maybe not.
Which meant that maybe you'd never do a special, which means you wouldn't have five. You have five specials right now. Five.
Yeah.
What a fucking body of work, man. So yeah, if like things had gone the other direction, Jesus, God knows what would have happened to you.
I mean, that's like a crazy one. I've had other ones where it's like people are, you know, because I used to work the club system pretty relentlessly. And this is like pre-ticket selling. So before you're selling tickets, you're just doing whoever's at the club. And it's good for you in the sense that it sharpens your sword. Like you learn how to deal with all types of crowds all over the country. But man, I mean, I had shows. I wouldn't, it wasn't like weekly or even monthly, but I would say every quarter you would have one that would go completely sideways.
Yeah.
And the thing, you find that what's your pet peeve from audience too. And for me, it wasn't somebody yelling something out. That's actually something you kind of develop a skill set for.
Yes.
It was like people just really honestly just being drunk and disrespecting the whole experience. So they start talking and you're what are you doing? And they're like, I'm talking to my friend. And you're like, and that shit, I would feel my blood pressure just start to go up. And I heard this thing from Gary Shandling once where he said, don't get mad, get funny. And so what it's supposed to mean is like in those moments, you try to keep your head in the space of stay a comedian, right? What's the funny thing to say here? And it's very helpful if you can do it, but you realize that it actually takes work. It's not as simple as just saying it and knowing it. You have to practice it. And I remember after I heard that, I would try to incorporate it more. So I would go in the millisecond, I would be like, what's the funnier thing to do here? And I would try to make jokes of it. But the days where I failed, when anger would win, dude, I would say such vicious things that aren't funny. They're just mean.
Yeah.
And I would just be in a state of rage, basically, where you couldn't continue. That people would be like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And I have women crying, being dragged out of the show. Like, yeah, you fucking pig. And I'm just just completely.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, just because I mean, looking back on it, you realize that you're so hurt that you were trying to be vulnerable. Because there's this thing that happens, even if you're like a silly person on stage, there is something about you being vulnerable, right? Like if we're having a conversation right now and you are super vulnerable about something and then I kind of mock you or belittle you about it, you automatically go oh, I don't want to be vulnerable with this guy anymore. Right.
Right.
Like, I don't want to, I'm not going to open up to him. He just he just mocked me. And I think there's a version of that that can happen on stage that will basically ruin a show.
Yep.
And that was a thing where whenever I had real drunks, I was about to enter a moment where I was going to say something. Then you go I don't want to say that shit anymore. You know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's a whole thing, but the bombing, you have to bomb. I've met people who are younger in stand-up who are I haven't really had any bomb. I'm like, well, you haven't done that much stand-up then.
Right.
Or you're not really trying.
You're not trying or experimenting that's to me you can sort of understand everything from one thing you're doing. And it's that is the metaphor. I mean, if you want to get to be a good comedian, the worst rut I ever gotten in my fucking life was because of cowardice, because I didn't want to try new jokes. I had jokes that were working enough. I would have on paper a good show, but get off stage and just feel dead inside. What am I?
100%.
What am I doing? Why not just get an animatronic version of me to wheel out on stage and do all the same sounds and movements? And so it's to me, that seems to be something that people are desperately trying to avoid in their own lives.
It's your brain can do this thing where I've been in the exact same rut, even not that long ago, just be on tour, have a show. Meaning I have my show that I put on down. I know how to do the show. Go out there, big crowd, big crowd. show goes well, really well, get off stage, and I'm bummed out. And someone's like, what's wrong? I'm like, that sucked. And they're like, what do you mean that sucked?
Yeah.
What's really happening is that I'm in a funk because I haven't done anything new in a minute. And yeah. And I'm allowing myself to understand that I haven't done anything new and I'm reluctant to try. I'm just going like, I don't want to try.
Yeah.
I don't want to try. This works. I just want to do this. And then I do the show again and I feel just shitty again. And then it's like I have to work up, like it's courage. It's like you're almost working up the internal courage to go, I'm going to try something totally new this show. And, you know, maybe it'll go poorly. And sometimes it does. But then you at least go, I'm not a coward. I tried something new.
Yes.
You know?
Dude, and it's so weird because you forget that every joke you're telling that works started off as a joke that you tried for the first time. Like every single joke. And somehow yes. even knowing that, you're like afraid to try to do the only thing that has given you jokes yeah. for your whole life. It's still terrifying totally. To come out because it feels so good to be in control. It feels so good to know that you're set. It feels so good when you get that hour worked out and it's killing and you're like, this is working. And you just, that's the rich effect. It's like, it's the comedic equivalent of the 1%. It's the comedic, you know what I mean? It's the comedic equivalent.
Yes.
It's just like, okay, I've got it. Now I'm just going to just stay in this exact spot in my life for as long as I can. I mean, that's why people kill themselves, man. I'm certain of it. That's like people say
100%. Because here's the thing that you figure out in all the arts and definitely in stand-up comedy too. If you never get to the point where you're there, you never get to the finish. There is no finish line. So people think like, oh, maybe if you have like the special or you sell out the arena, it's like that's none of that is the thing. You don't get, you are an artist and you just have to keep creating. You have to keep doing it. Like yeah. you have to keep painting, you have to keep writing. So once you kind of accept that, you're just like, you know, you go, oh yeah, I'm just never done.
Never done. Does it now that you are, you know, because we were all hanging out at the Comedy Store before
yeah.
anything, but you were hanging out before your mom's house, before like your incredible and deserved success as a comedian. Now that you have the pressure, man, like of a family, the pressure, you've got kids, you've got like an overhead, you're running a business.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that? Like, how do you, you know, because comedians, like, we started off like completely freewheeling. Free,
yeah.
free, like this intense freedom. It's like, if you weren't making a bunch of money, that's okay, whatever. If you were making just a like money, then now you might not even, you would think, that's not enough, that you have to pay me so much more than that to do. But you would make that, and you would be so happy. You had rent and yeah. food. For the month. That meant rent and food for the month. Rent is paid. That feeling of, okay, rent's paid. Next credit card, food. I think I can swing that and you were yeah. happy. So there, for me, that kind of state of consciousness was conducive to comedy. It was, you know what I mean? Like you could be a miscreant. You could. So how are you dealing with your role as like running a business with Christina, running a family, running a house, all the shit that goes into that, and simultaneously like creating the creative space that you're, that at least, I don't know, my jokes come from, or that I'm assuming most comedians' jokes come from.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good one. I think a lot of the funny thing is a lot of the cliche stuff that you go, yeah, bullshit or whatever, it all is true. That's one thing I've learned in life, that like everything you hear when you're a kid or when you're coming up, yeah, all you need is love and all that, like money won't buy you happiness. Like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like all those things are unfortunately super true when you discover their real meaning. Like you just hear words.
Yeah.
But like, I know people won't, but like people don't believe me when I say this, but like as it is cool to get paid a lot to do something, it really isn't fulfilling. It doesn't make you feel
Right.
complete. All the things that are all your insecurities that you had before then that you think will be like resolved by that
Yeah.
do not go away. None of them do.
Right.
So if you try to find meaning in like success, I think you come up empty. So you really start to have to find like you have to find meaning elsewhere.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I've been getting more into the realizing how important my presence is for the kids
Yeah.
because I've been such a lunatic with touring. And I
Yeah.
think that since my tour ended a little while back, and I've had a real revelation of like, oh my God, it was actually kind of heartbreaking to realize how much I had toured and not just what I had missed
Yeah.
for myself, but like seeing how it affects them.
Yeah.
That was a kind of a tough pill to swallow. So I'm just trying to like, I don't know. It's one of those things where you go like, I don't know if you ever feel like this, but when people go like, you have all these things going on, I'm like, yeah. Also, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing, man.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how I do any of these things. I don't know. I mean, we just do what we can. I do the best I can. I do the best I can at home. I try to make you know, decisions business-wise that are like solid, but also I try to take some risks, calculated risks. So there's things that we're doing as a business in that regard. Stand-up wise, I always have the same panicked feeling every time a special comes out.
Yeah.
My fifth special has just come out. Or I don't know if it's out, whatever, July 4th. I don't know when this airs, but I always have this feeling where I go, fuck, how am I going to come up with a new hour? And then I sit there and I go, it's impossible. I'm not going to. And then what saves me is that I go, this is what you thought and felt the last four times as well.
Yeah.
You had the exact same feeling. So now I know it's a familiar feeling.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't make it go away, but at least you go, oh, I remember what this feels like.
Yeah.
And then for me, the only way out is just to get on stage, accept that all those bits and all those jokes are gone, and just try. Like you just have to try. And
Yeah.
I usually get up and I like, a few times I'll do sets and I'll be like, well, that's dog shit. Like, there's no way that's going to make its way into the next hour.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you do it a few more times and you go, boom, I got one. Like,
Yeah.
I got one. I got
Yeah.
5 minutes now. And then that's the only way. That's the only way I know how to do it. I don't know how other people do it.
Well, it's really nice to hear you say that I don't know what I'm doing thing because sometimes that haunts me, man. And sometimes it's like people expect you to be able to give them some like geometrically perfect explanation of your life, like as though there was some plan or there was like since you were a kid, you mapped out a strategy that would lead you to the point where you could do comedy specials or and I don't feel like that at all. And I wonder, is this standard or non-standard? Does the president feel like this? Is this how most people in the government feel? Is there anyone who's like, I know what I'm doing, and here's the plan? Or underneath all that, is there just a general sense of confusion and like sort of like, burrowing through life like a mole in a yard or something? You're just trying to like, you're doing something, but the plan part.
I think in the arts, ultimately we're all like this, whether we admit it or not. I think you could probably ask fucking Paul McCartney, like, how do you write songs? And he'd be like, I don't fucking know, man. I guess I just go like this, and then I see what I come. I really do think that all artists are like that. Some of them might not say it like that, but I do think that because everybody knows, like there's this thing where it's like there's this magic quality, right? When people are like, how did you come up with that line? You're like, I don't know, dude. I just said it.
But do you think it's just it's like a trait that is only like in artists, or is it like is the basic human experience rooted in confusion?
Yes.
Fuck.
And if not, and then I think as you get wiser and older, it's the acceptance, the realization that you really don't have the answers. That is what existence is about. It's about going like, it's about the full idea that I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm just going to do stuff. I think I know how to raise these kids. I think I know how to do this work. I think I know how to be a good friend. I mean, the people who go, I'll tell you exactly how to do all those things. It's like, what? I almost don't believe that they believe what they're saying. I think they want to believe what they're saying when they go, I'll tell you how to do everything, you know?
Right.
That's their version of like coaching themselves.
When, you know, like if I found myself, I'm guessing at night, probably maybe in the day, in the early morning, in my neighbor's yard, hungry, not really knowing what I'm doing, you know, just kind of going moment to moment, committed to hunting and eating only what I kill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if that were me, like, I think I could see myself grabbing the dog, eating it, hanging it up, it up during a video podcast, during a conversation where someone's going to see what definitely looks like a dog pelt with a collar on it that doesn't look like a tracking collar that you'd put on a big squirrel. You know,
let me just say something. You've never been here and you have no idea how big these things are.
Tom, thank you so much, man. I know you're like getting a break right now and you're out there in like God's country. Thank you so much for coming on the show. And
absolutely.
I'm so excited for your new special.
Thank you, sir.
Is the one I saw at the Wilbur. That's the one that's some version of what's coming out, right? Like Aaron and I came to
you
see.
You saw me at ACL.
Not Wilbur. Why did I say Wilbur?
Right?
ACL.
Yeah.
Sold out ACL.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the special?
Yeah, that's basically the special. That's basically the special, yeah. Yeah.
It's so good. And I hope you all.
Thanks, man.
Well, where is it? Netflix?
It's on Netflix. Yeah. 4th of July. It's called Sledgehammer. It's on Netflix. And yeah, I'm super stoked for it. I really am. I don't think I've ever in my career been this excited for one to come out. I think I just felt, I think it was the fact, honestly, that it was 3 years and I realized how much better you can make your hour in another year than it, because I was in like a 2 year cycle
right.
And the pandemic threw it off. And I was like, oh, this extra year is actually hugely beneficial.
Yes. Yes. Take your time. Take your time.
Take your time.
You know, that's something Mitzi said to me that I'll never forget. That's where comedians fuck up, is they're always in a hurry. Don't be in a hurry.
She's right.
Yeah. Don't be in a hurry. What's the rush? What's the big deal? I think I'm going to record.
There's no rush.
I'm recording my special in July, but maybe I'll do it in 2 more years. Tom.
Oh, where are you doing it?
The Mothership.
You're doing it there?
Yeah, I'm doing it in July. I'm recording it like middle of July, late July. I'm terrified. This is my first special. It's, you know how that feels,
dude.
Man. It's just fucking intense, man.
Yeah, it's going to be great. How many are you shooting?
Four. Lance Bangs is helping me with it. So like it'll be, you know, at least I have someone who knows what they're doing production wise.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know where you're going to take it or not yet?
Not yet. We're just going to film it, edit it. See if it's worth a damn, and then if it is, then we'll take it from there. But you know, I love the model a lot of comedians are doing. They just put it on YouTube. I think that's so cool. Just throw it up there, gets people to your shows. It's the best.
It's brilliant that they have done that. That's taking the making the opportunity your own. It's like why are you waiting for someone to say yes? We allow you to just put it up.
Put it out there. Don't read the comments. Move up to the mountains. Yeah. Don't go into society ever again. Tom?
Just hunt, you know? Hunt. Eat what you kill.
Eat what you kill. Eat what you kill. Wow. Well, man, you are the best. And this means a lot to me. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Duncan.
That was Tom Segura. Everybody, please watch Sledgehammer on Netflix. Subscribe to Your Mom's House. Subscribe to Two Bears, One Cave. Bert Kreischer. I think that's what it's called. Subscribe to anything he puts out there. And also, a huge thank you to our sponsors, as always. And mostly, thanks to you for letting this be my job. I love you. Follow that curiosity, friends, into the forest, whether it's a forest of pubic hair or an actual forest. Really, there's no difference when love is what guides you. I'll see you next week. Hare Krishna.